Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. As of yesterday, America has seen 317 mass shootings in 2017. In case you're keeping track, there were 483 in 2016. Recently on In the Moment, South Dakota FOP National Trustee Tony Harrison said we should expand our definition to include active killers to account for those who use trucks and other weapons for maximum human devastation. Today, we talk about active shooter or active killer, depending on how you want to look at it, prevention and preparation and some resources. We're broadcasting live today from the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Sitting across the table from me, Lieutenant Jeff Garden. He's with the Sioux Falls Police Department. Welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you for having me.
All right, tell me a little bit about your role in the police department. What's your title and what does that encompass?
I'm a lieutenant in our Uniform Services Division under our operations, and I'm specifically commander of our Support Services section, which includes all traffic services, enforcement and investigations, canine, park, and special event, as well as all the special operations, SWAT, bomb squad, crisis negotiation, our trackers.
So you're a busy person.
It does keep a person busy, yes.
And you have a whole lot of great people working with you and for you and getting those jobs done, right?
All fantastic. Yeah. They're all multiple volunteers. They volunteered to be on the department. They volunteered for patrol, and they volunteered again for either traffic services or one of the special operations spots, or in some cases, several of those.
All right. So let's talk about, the news of the day and the news of far too many days. Lately, it seems there's a community in America where there was a mass shooting, which I was looking into it today, and we're defining that for these purposes with the numbers I just read as four or more people in a certain amount of time and in a certain area. So let's talk about when there is another active shooter or another mass shooting in America. How does that, I know how it affects me, and parents are affected a certain way, and recent cases, churchgoers were affected a certain way. How does it affect you and your fellow law enforcement officers?
Well, first of all, we're sad for the loss of life and all the lives that that will affect. But then as the facts roll in, we look at that incident and we tear it apart as much as we can and see, first of all, how would we have responded to that in our community, and how can we plan or deter such behavior in the future for our city.
Right. Do you learn something from every case eventually as you look at it? Does it somehow get rolled into training in the future, or does it somehow sort of feed your knowledge overall about what the possibilities are?
It does. If you look at how we started training for active shooters about 20 years ago to where we are now, it's a constant evolving process, and it evolves based on incidents that happen throughout the country and the world, and how we respond to it. It used to be that we worried about gunfire, and now we take vehicles into account, mm-hmm. and things like that.
So the first mass shooting I remember was Columbine. That's the first one that I remember really paying attention to, unless I'm forgetting something right now. What's the first mass shooting that you really remember as a professional law enforcement officer?
It would be Columbine. That was a watershed moment for how law enforcement responded to active shooters. At that time, it was surround, contain, and try and gain negotiations, mm-hmm. Wait for SWAT and special operations to get there. And it and clearly that's not the answer. It takes too long. And that's when nationally started training patrol officers in special operations tactics, if you will, to get in there and directly start dealing with the situation. Time was not on our side in these incidents.
I want to talk a little bit about how we train ourselves and businesses and organizations, hire consultants to come in or find resources for their own training. Is that training sort of changing? How do you seek out, the training that is most, most effective, most research-based, supported by law enforcement and that sort of thing? What are you looking for?
Well, two great resources to begin with. our Department of Homeland Security Active Shooter Preparedness. It's a website that you can go to, and there's lots of resources there that businesses can use. It's right from private businesses to first responders. There's various guides in there that they can access. And then there's also FEMA, which has a specific section for churches and houses of worship and resources that they have there. There's multiple languages that they can print booklets, pamphlets, and quick reference guide cards off, if you will, on the site there. So there's lots of resources right there that they can go to.
Right.
And then there's also a number of private consultants that they can hire and bring in. And there's a lot of very good ones out there. Just make sure you check your references and sources.
Right. So one of the trainings that I've gone through as a state employee was ALICE, and they talked about how things were sort of changing, and it was alert, lockdown, I'm going to forget, inform, counter, and evacuate is what we sort of went. One of the things they talked to us about was this notion of, you know, when is it time to hide? And when is it time to not be a sitting duck, as it were, and just sort of sit back passively? Can you speak to that? Is that something that we're looking at changing, you know, telling students to just hide, or versus get out of the building versus, you know, go after the attacker?
As far as students in schools, that's kind of a unique situation there. And that's something more that we're talking about to administrators about, and how they deal with that. If there's a whole procedure there that the schools deal with, and for obvious reasons we won't go into detail, what they do. But that has evolved over the years as well, and it we have changed how we do some of those things also.
Is going after the attacker ever a good idea? I mean, what is that? How do you, when people ask you that, how do you sort of approach it when people say, well, should I hide or should I, you know, defend?
It is a last resort. If you can get away from them, if you can hide, those are obvious, the first choices that you want to take. Because if you engage with somebody, especially if they're armed, the chances of getting hurt, they go up dramatically. So as a last resort, and in preservation of yourself, or possibly even others, that's something that you would have to take on. And that's a very personal choice. So
we're going to put links up to the websites that you mentioned on our website, listen.sdpb.org, after the program today. But I'm wondering, are there highlights that you can tell us, you know, for people who are sort of looking around their office space, looking around their place of worship, and wondering where to begin? What can you help us take away just today without going into the, you know, the internet?
Sure. There's some basic ones, that things that people can work on themselves. The first is their very own personal situational awareness. Know what's going on around you. Know who's in your space, who's getting close to your personal space, and it's going to be subjective to where you're at the time. What's normal, what's not normal, and just be aware of what's going on. It's so easy in this day and age to get lost in an electronic device, for example.
Right.
even the years that I've had of situational awareness, I'll catch myself occasionally doing that. So it happens. So again, situational awareness, and I'm not suggesting hyper vigilant attitude or anything like that. You don't need to be that vigilant. Just a casual self-awareness of your surroundings. For churches and businesses, they can have and should have a very comprehensive plan, and those websites can actually help them achieve that those plans. And for an individual, and a family, for example, they should talk about their plan. They can do what's called if and then thinking. If this happens, then we'll do this. A different form of a fire drill, if you will.
All right. So, can you give me an example of if and then thinking and how it would come up in a family?
For example, a family is in a crowded location. You can plug in any location you want.
Sure.
A large location that has a large number of people, and if they hear shots fired, If we hear this, then as a group, we're going to go here.
Okay.
Our first goal is just to get out of the area, and then they can work through the possibilities from there of what to do. So,
all right, you maybe can't answer this question. Maybe it's a question for a child psychiatrist or something.
Sure.
But, you know, how old do you think kids should be before you start having those kind of conversations? You've, you know, as a parent, you've got many law enforcement officers who are parents. Are they talking to their kids when they're, do cops talk to their kids is my real question.
Yes.
At fairly young ages about situational awareness and safety and that sort of thing. And should we all behave a little bit like that?
We have those conversations. But it's a different mindset that
right.
We live and work in, and and I would not suggest that everybody
right.
go about their daily business that way either.
But what I'm hearing from people is this sense that, you know, the mindset that I used to think is a mindset for law enforcement families, I see that transferring to people who normally didn't think about. I mean, in their heads, the police are always going to take care of this. If you have a problem, and when I was a kid, this is how you dial 911. I mean, that was what you learned. You call 911 and the cops will come help you, right? We still teach our kids that. We still rely on law enforcement for emergency response. But there's also this awareness as we see the news that this could happen and it's going to be 2 minutes before law enforcement can get there. And 2 minutes is an awfully long time. And people are starting to have a different mentality. It's kind of what I'm seeing as someone who's not in a law enforcement family anymore. And now I'm seeing all these other people are having these same conversations. Do you see that the mentality is sort of seeping out and people without the training that you have, without the experience that you have, without the equipment and the gear and the firepower that you have are starting to think more like that?
Yes, and more of those conversations are being had in families, and I attribute that to a lot more training going out to the public sector, if you
okay.
will.
Sure.
Over the last 5-10 years, the increase in the public's request for active shooter training and preparedness has gone up a great deal, and as part of that training, they're taking it back to their families. And they're talking about it through the training that they receive.
What kind of training can people get locally for someone to come in and give them an evaluation? Or, you know, what kind of conversations do you have with local business owners or churches?
We have the conversations that we'll have is we'll go in and we'll walk through their site with them. And we'll get them directed towards the resources that they can use for their site. And once they get a plan in place, we'll come back and I'll sit down or one of my representatives, and we'll go through the plan with them. And and there's a lot of businesses and churches also that allow us to train in their facilities after hours and get to know different locations.
Okay. So what, you know, you mentioned event planning earlier as, you know, or event coordination. That's a whole different area, too. We looked at the shootings in Las Vegas as, a major event. How serious do you take pretty much every single event in the city of Sioux Falls where you cover? Can you plan for every event? Can you plan for every contingency?
You don't know every contingency,
right.
So it's difficult to plan for them. But we will ourselves go through the if-then type planning. And the security planning for events has been a continual and increasing process. The access that we limit, and in some cases we don't allow bags and some in events. There's vehicle barriers that we now use that we never did before, things like that. So it is an increasing venue, and it's increasing more and more, and it will continue. And it is our goal is for people to come out to these events, have a great time, and not worry about their safety, because that's what we do, and then just have a good time and not even know that these extra things are there.
The most recent two mass shootings in America, yesterday in Northern California and the one in Texas at the rural church, both of those shooters ended up having a history of violence and problems with the criminal justice system. Do you see that this says something about criminal justice? Do you look at patterns there and say, this is an indication of where we are as a nation and things need to be changed?
That's not something that we really look at. That's something for others to deal with and go from there. We deal with trying to counter whoever it is. It can be somebody local, it can be somebody international, and that's what we're working for. As far as the criminal justice system, other folks will look at that and deal with that.
All right. Main takeaway, go to the websites, the FEMA website, Department of Homeland Security. We'll put you could probably find those on your own right now on Google, but we'll put a link up on sdpb.org after the show. And I'm wondering, is there a Sioux Falls Police Department link to that, too? If they find your website, will there be a link to it? Do we know?
Sure. I don't think that there is a link there. They're very easy to find.
Right. So go through that. Start reading. Talk to people in your organization. Talk to people in your church. Talk to your family. And just keep having those conversations. Anything else that we missed?
I don't think so.
All right. Lieutenant Jeff Garden, thank you so much. Before I let you go, we need to clear up at the beginning of our conversation. We talked about people in SWAT and traffic. We called them volunteers. They're paid law enforcement officers who volunteer for special duty within the department, or are we talking about volunteer citizens?
Nope. They're police officers that have volunteered for additional duty.
All right. There we go. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time. Come back anytime.
Thank you.